Hello. Before you start this episode of The Game Changers, I wanted to take a moment to tell you about our new documentary, Abby Ward, A Bump in the Road, which explores the challenges faced by professional female athletes and all working mothers. It follows the remarkable journey of an England rugby player as she battles back to the professional game just 17 weeks after the birth of her baby, and then on to secure her place in England's Six Nations squad for 2024. The documentary is free to watch in the UK on ITVX or globally on Rugby Pass TV. And don't forget that our other documentary, Game On, The Unstoppable Rise of Women's Sport, is still available to watch on Netflix in the UK. Now it's time for the Game Changers. Hello and welcome to The Game Changers. I'm Sue Anstis, and this is the podcast where you'll hear from trailblazing women in sport who are knocking down barriers and challenging the status quo for women and girls everywhere. What can we learn from their journeys as we explore some of the key issues around equality in sport and beyond? I'd like to start with a big thank you to our partners Sport England, who support the Game Changers podcast through a National Lottery Award. My guest today is an incredible lioness, Jess Carter. Jess was part of the England team that won the Euros in 2022 and won silver in the World Cup in 2023. Jess plays for Chelsea in the WSL, where she's just signed an extension to her contract, having been with the team since 2018. So Jess, before we start and talk all things football, I'd quite like to ask you about a different sport if I can. I believe you were once quite a keen rugby player.
Yeah, no, I did. When I was in primary school, I'm not even sure what age it was really, but one of my friend's parents just asked if I wanted to come along to rugby with their son. And I went, and it started off as tag rugby, then went into full contact, etc. And I stayed with them. It was at my local team, Claverden. And then it got to the point where I couldn't play rugby with the boys anymore. And I quite enjoyed it. So I went and joined Worcester Warriors girls team and played with them for a little bit of time. And then when I joined Birmingham at 16, they told me I had to, I guess, kind of make a choice between football and rugby because of the risk of injury. And at that time, I just chose football. I'd probably say I think I was a better rugby player, to be honest. But clearly the decision I made wasn't too bad in the end.
Absolutely. And do you get a chance to watch much women's rugby at all today as a fan? Do you follow the sport at all?
No, I don't really. I haven't watched rugby in a long time. I definitely still say it's a sport that I really enjoyed playing. It was never a sport that I actually watched much of, really. I just liked playing it. But I think that's the same with a lot of sports, really. I say I like a lot of sport, but I don't actually watch as much anymore.
And you say about where you grew up in kind of Birmingham, Warwick area, and you were captain of the Warwick Juniors in the county, up to the county championship, I believe. So what are your early memories of playing football?
Honestly, I think all my favourite moments are from when I was younger playing football. I've been lucky enough to achieve a lot in my football career, but I think being young and just playing with absolute freedom is I don't think anything can compare to that. I was lucky enough to play with all my friends when we were younger with Warwick, and to achieve some great things there. So that was definitely great. And, you know, I got to play football and play rugby. I had the best of both worlds, really.
And when did you realise and really appreciate that you had that great talent that would take you to that next stage? Is that around the age of 16?
No, not really. I think that for me, football was always just about having a laugh and having a bit of a kick about. And I think that still to this day, I say that I don't really think I took football seriously until I joined Chelsea. And I was about 19, I think, because even when I was at Birmingham, I mean, a lot of the women there, we worked full time. So a lot of the women worked two jobs, etc. And to me, football at Birmingham was great. I had fun. I always tried my best, but it was just more about having a good time rather than actually this is a career. And I joined Chelsea, and I think football had just grown so much in those 4 years that I was at Birmingham. I joined Chelsea, and I think things just went on to a different level of the professionalism that you had to have in order to play at Chelsea just went up massively. So I think I was probably about 19 before I actually realised that this could be a career.
That's really interesting, isn't it? So were you studying, you were in the academy in Birmingham, were you studying at the same time as that?
Yeah, so I was studying at the same time. I was at college, at Solihull College, because Birmingham had a good connection with them. So I would study there in a day and train with Birmingham, which was also just around the corner. I joined their academy when I was 15, and I was only there for a few months before I turned 16 in the October and joined the first team, and was with them until I signed for Chelsea when I was 19.
And you say that whole not feeling like you were that high or still taking it really seriously as a player, but you'll tell us about your debut for Birmingham City, because that's pretty amazing then, as coming into the team as a 16-year-old.
Yeah, I remember that Meg Sargent, I think she got injured. She was a player that played left back at the time. She got injured not long before the Champions League game, my debut. And we had actually a friendly game the week before against the local boys team. And I remember before the game, like my manager, he put me at fullback because of, he kind of really didn't have anyone else to play there. And the manager said, if you do well, you'll play there on Sunday or whenever it was against Arsenal. And I was just like, yeah, okay, whatever. And I went home, and then my manager called my dad and said, would you mind just having a day off from school because of we wanted to start in the Champions League? And this obviously is during the week, so I would have had school at that point. And like my dad just said, yeah, straight away, he's big football. And I went to the game, and obviously we played, but I don't really think it really settled at the time. I didn't really notice or realise what I'd kind of achieved in that moment. I mean, how many people can say they played in the Champions League semi-final, let alone at the age of 16 on their debut? It was just, at the time, I literally had no care, or I was in the world pucks of, I guess, being a youngster and just having a good time. And obviously now when I look back, I'm very well aware that it was a pretty huge achievement.
Yeah. And did you get player of the match as well in that game?
Yeah, I did. I did get player of the match. This new kid, I guess, that no one knew of. So, and I didn't do too bad. So yeah, and I think that's probably one of my best achievements, really.
It's with that completely relaxed attitude, isn't it? That's probably the thing that helps there too. As you said, you signed for Chelsea in 2018. And I remember seeing you in the documentary series, One Dream, One Team. And you were very open about the challenge of the intensity of training at Chelsea after Birmingham. So how different was it, and how tough was that transition for you?
Yeah, I think that the transition was tough because I think, like I've said, I went from just having a laugh and having fun to, well, like, this is, we're competing for titles here. We're in every single day. The intensity of training is so much higher than anything I'd ever experienced before. My version of what professionalism was whilst I was at Birmingham was not what professionalism actually is. And I quickly found that out. I went from playing pretty much every game at Birmingham to hardly getting on the pitch at Chelsea. And it was just, everything I almost knew from Birmingham was so different at Chelsea. And I think that that's kind of what made me realise that if I wanted to play football, that I was going to have to go up a lot of levels in order to, I guess, perform, in order to stay there and compete at this club. And, you know, that definitely took a while before I think I was, I guess, cemented a place or was really properly part of the team in terms of like my professionalism. So yeah, it definitely took its time.
And do you think the documentary painted a true picture of you at the time? Like, I guess the thing is, how much has your attitude and kind of changed towards fitness and nutrition?
Yeah, I mean, I didn't watch the whole documentary because I watched about two episodes and not really, I didn't love it. I didn't like the way that things were portrayed at times because I don't think it was an accurate reflection of everyone's situation.
Yeah.
But there's definitely, you know, the parts about myself where, you know, I spoke about nutrition and fitness. They have always been my two biggest barriers in playing football. I think that initially it was my lack of understanding of what I needed to, like the fitness levels I needed to be at, how well you needed to eat to be an athlete. Like I was 16, 17, 18, I could have eaten McDonald's for breakfast and still run around and been great because I was a kid and had all this energy. You can't do that at 19, 20, 24. Like it's, you know, you just can't get away with those things. And I think that I had a lack of knowledge initially. And then I think I had a lack of wanting to learn about it because I was 16, 17, 18. I'm not a teenager, cares about what you put in your body, really. And I think that obviously having gone through the first few years of playing for Chelsea and having to realise that I have to be, you know, fitter than everyone else just to get on the pitch. I have to eat better than other people to get an opportunity, those sorts of things. And to be able to play 90 minutes every 3 days, which often we have at Chelsea, that's tough for the world's fittest player to do, let alone someone who's not looking after themselves properly. So they are, I think it took probably the first, I'd even say maybe 3 years at Chelsea for me to really get into a place where I thought I was in a position to compete, to play. So yeah, my view of things now has definitely changed compared to that documentary, that's for sure.
It's a lovely quote, and it's a while ago I watched it, but I love a quote of the whole, where you put seeds in your yogurt. Why would you want to spoil yogurt by putting seeds in it? It was like exactly what my daughters would have said, exactly the same thing at 16. So I completely understand. You're a young woman, aren't you, in a different world?
Yeah. I mean, and there's so many people that obviously, as athletes, I think for a lot of people, the nutrition side of it is really tough. I mean, for me, I'm a really sociable person. I like to go out with my friends. We like to go up to restaurants and eat and, you know, interact with other people. And I'm not going to sit here and say that I sit at home and eat chicken and vegetables every day, because I definitely do not. But, you know, it's that balance between trying to be a professional and also, I guess, enjoy your life as well. Because if you're not enjoying it, you're not going to be performing at your best 100%. I don't care what anyone says. And everyone's, you know, you've got to find a way to enjoy yourself the best you can whilst being the best professional you can as well.
Yeah, absolutely. In moderation, isn't it? In 2017, you were named PFA Young Player of the Year, and you also made your senior England debut. So how did that feel at the time to be called up then for the national team?
Yeah, I think that it's, I mean, my experience with England has always been really interesting. I've been in and out of the setup. I joined quite late as a 16-year-old and then been in and out of the setup. So I think that's always been an interesting journey for me. I think I just remember at the time, it sounds really bad now, but I wasn't really too bothered at the time when I got called up. I think my family were a lot more excited than what I was. It was, you know, it just kind of was what it was. It was more playing football, etc. I wasn't excited to be away from home for 10 days. I don't know many people that are. And I went, and it was just, obviously it was a lot more intense. So there were more meetings. I was away from home, sharing a room with someone that was 10 years older than me. I think at the time I shared a room with Kaz Carney, and, you know, obviously I knew her from Birmingham, but we weren't exactly friends. And I was a kid, and I wouldn't say I enjoyed my initial experience of going up to senior level. It was something, again, entirely different. But I think that my experiences of England senior team has definitely changed over the years with the older I've got, but equally with the management that's kind of come in place, and the type of environment that we try to create at the senior team now is different to before. And I guess that just goes, you know, that adapts and changes with the way that football changes and football grows. And I'd like to think that this environment that we've created at England is a much friendlier and nicer one than what was there a handful of years ago.
Absolutely. You can see the difference, can't you? And you say that coming late to it at 16. So were you arriving, are there other players that have been from the pathway from a much younger age, sort of England under X, Y and Z on the way to that age group?
Yeah. So when I first joined with England, even like at the youth system, I joined at 16, but I was playing for the under 19s. And normally I should have been playing for, I think it's the under 16s or under 17s. So I went up an age group. And I think a lot of the girls that were playing for the under 19s at that time had been in since the younger ages, because they'd been in academies longer, or they'd been like recognised earlier, etc. Whereas I hadn't been recognised until I joined Birmingham, because before then I just played at a grassroots team. So, and then when I got into the setup, I was a little bit in and out. I wasn't there all the time. I was at the under 19s, but once that stopped, I was just really inconsistent with my England youth career. And then when it got to the point where it was either youth or seniors, I then didn't get selected for seniors for quite a while. Or I did and had a call up, then wasn't for a while, etc. Just at that point, I don't really know any other reason, but I did get selected.
How did you feel about that at the time?
I mean, I wasn't really bothered, to be honest, because at that time I wasn't, my main ambition wasn't to play for England senior team. It was just play football and what will be, really. If I get selected, I do. If I don't, I go back to Birmingham and I play there every week. And it wasn't a goal of mine to play for England at that time. So it wasn't something I got disheartened about at all. And I think every manager has, you know, they have their reasons for not selecting you. Whether you agree with them is different, but everyone's, you know, whether it's a philosophy, style of play, fitness, just don't like you as a player, it could be anything. Someone could be better than you. So I think that's always the case in football. And then obviously when I joined Chelsea, I also then wasn't bothered about seniors as much, because I had to get into the Chelsea squad first. You can't get selected for England if you're not playing consistently for Chelsea. So that was like my next ambition. And then I think once I started to cement my place at Chelsea a bit more, and I guess showcase what I could do at a higher level, the next step really was then, can I get into the England team? And once I get into that team, can I keep my place there? And I think that was then the main goal from that point.
And as you say, there was that kind of gap, wasn't there, 2017, and then a bit of a gap in and out. And it was kind of 2022 with the Euros and then into the World Cup that you've almost cemented that place. So, and clearly management's changed and the setup has changed and all those things. But do you feel you've significantly changed as a person and a player over that time? How do you feel you've changed? You got better?
Yeah. Yeah, no, obviously improved from on the pitch. My lifestyle off the pitch as well. Those sorts of things have definitely improved. And I guess what my own goals were, like I said before, I didn't care for playing for England. It wasn't a goal of mine. And obviously now that's changed to it being a goal of mine as well. And I also just think that, I guess I think that my managers previously would have said I'm quite a direct person and what you see is what you get, wear your heart on your sleeve, all that sort of stuff. And I was a person that if I wasn't happy, you'd know about it. And I'd maybe be quite outspoken. I am all here for being outspoken. I think being outspoken is excellent. I just obviously learned the order I've got. There's a way in which you can do it and a way not to do it. And that is definitely something that I've had to learn as I've gotten older, to just some things you can't do, like kind of control what you can control. And there's some things you just have to get on with. And yeah, I've always been for one for voicing my opinion. So I think having to learn to do that in the right way has been a challenge for sure.
Yeah. It's maturity, isn't it? It's like time and experience. Yeah. And working with different people, it comes in time. And Emma Hayes, the current Chelsea manager, is about to leave to manage the US women's national team. And obviously there's been much speculation in the media about who the new manager might be. I wondered, do the players talk openly about who they would like in that role? Do you have a preference? Do you have, as players, do you have thoughts, or are you just waiting to see what happens?
I think most of us are just waiting to see what happens. Obviously, Emma's been at Chelsea for as long as I can remember. So, you know, most people don't know Chelsea without Emma Hayes. So it was going to be a massive transition regardless of who we get in. I don't really know. It's not really something we've spoken about as players, really, who we do or don't want. Maybe individuals have, but... And I personally, my knowledge of managers is horrendous. I know players, I know what I have to do on the pitch, but I can't tell you who seems like a good manager and who doesn't, because I don't think it's as black and white. Like, people think that, you know, if you're winning, you must mean you have a good manager. And if you're losing, you must have a bad one. We all know it's not as black and white as that. So, you know, and it's not something that I can control, really. So I just have to do what I can. And when we get a new manager, you know, try and find out a way to work with them the best that I can and the best that we can as a team.
I was going to ask that, and how much a manager and their personality and attitudes can impact how you feel about playing for a club too as a player? Because you say it's part of it, but it's not the whole package, is it?
100%. I think that you often get, maybe when you initially sign for the club, it can be about what the team, you know, how good the team are and what that manager might come across as. But we all know that, you know, often, especially with the media and things, you don't know anyone until you actually get there and you spend that kind of time with them. And I think that it's, you know, it's easy to say this manager might be good because of the media have spoken this way about them or because they've done well. And that might be initially what gets you to go to a team. But I think actually then once you're actually at the team and you realize the way that you play, or, you know, there's so many things that then impact the reason why you might stay at that team versus then moving on.
Yeah, absolutely. And you appear clearly to be a laid-back, chilled person. But do you feel pressure before games? Do you get nervous before games, or do you need to kind of hype yourself up into it, or is it about...
No, I wouldn't say I'm a nervous person. If anything, I'm probably too laid-back, really. I probably need to have something that switches me on a bit quicker. But yeah, no, I think I'm really relaxed, because to me, not everyone will agree, but football is just a game and it's just a job. It's just a game, the same way everyone else has a job or a sport that they love to play. And for me, it's just going out and giving the best that you can. And, you know, obviously we're at a club like Chelsea, there is more pressure to try and win everything. And that's, you know, for some people that can be more nerve-wracking, because ultimately if you don't play well, you might not play the next game. If you don't play well, they'll get someone in. If you don't play well, they might not re-sign your contract. So there are other pressures there. But for me, before a game, I think that you just go out and you do the best that you can, and that's all you can do, really. And if it's not good enough, it's not good enough.
Love it. And obviously it's been an incredible couple of years for Lionesses, winning a home Euros in 2022. So what's your fondest memory as you look back? What are your kind of really core memories of that event?
Sounds really silly maybe, but actually we started to play volleyball during the tournament. I think maybe at the quarterfinal stage or the round of 16, one of the kit men just set up a volleyball net and we played it and loads of people got involved and it was just such good fun. The weather was amazing and we were all able to just completely switch off. You know, everyone's missing home and it's a long, being away with 23 women 24/7, that's a big ask, that is. You know, and being on someone else's schedule and time frame and away from home it's not fun. Like sometimes it's not fun at all. And so that was a real moment where I think it just picked everyone up and brought everyone together again. And we just had a lot of fun. I really loved that. And I know a lot of the other girls did. And I think that, you know, on the pitch, can you really beat the final? And to being part of that crowd during that game was incredible. I'm not really someone that gets bothered by stadiums, big stadiums, or like I don't get excited to play in a certain stadium or anything like that. But that day of walking out at Wembley and seeing the fans and hearing the fans, and it was just incredible. The roar of the national anthem, the roar when we scored, they were memories I think that will definitely last with everyone forever.
Oh, I love the memory of the final, obviously, but I love that sort of anecdote about the volleyball. So I think it was the rugby girls out in New Zealand playing cricket. Some of them playing beach cricket, one of the international teams. And that whole trying something, they're all amazing athletes, but playing something just for purely for fun and engagement can be so powerful, can't it?
Yeah, for sure. I think that obviously everyone's very different. And, you know, for some people, being part of the tournament was just fun and it was great. But for some people, they didn't have a great experience. They might not have played. They might have missed home more than others. They might have had other stuff going on. And I think going and playing volleyball is just something that everybody could totally switch off from anything going on in their own head and just enjoy being in this moment, like being able to play volleyball very badly, may I add, but just have an absolute great time.
I've got it lined up for your next fortnight. You know, rugby, then to football, and then like volleyball. Yeah. For your next and then playing in your first World Cup last summer in Australia. So was the tournament there everything you'd hoped to have been when you kind of thought about it in the past? Did it meet those expectations?
I'd never thought about playing in the World Cup, to be honest. Playing football is never something I envision myself doing as a career. So I wouldn't say I'm a goal setter, and I definitely don't think I would say playing in the World Cup is an unrealistic goal to set, and it's not something I ever thought I'd do. I mean, the quality we have here in England is unbelievable. So to think that I'd actually get to that stage isn't something I ever thought about. And I think so when I went, obviously, to the World Cup, same with the Euros, I didn't have any expectations, really. Obviously, people talk about it, and from the outside world, everyone thinks it's just amazing and it's got to be the best thing in the world. And it's also exhausting. You're miles and miles away from home. You don't get to speak to anyone. You're away for a long time if you get to the final. But equally, there are some amazing moments that you can't really explain. The bonds that you create with people because of you don't have your friends or family, the bonds that you create are unreal. For me, I was lucky enough that some of my family got to travel out to Australia. We got some incredible support from England and the FA, which they supplied some financial support to help get families out there, which was amazing because without that, my family wouldn't have been able to come. So yeah, they came out and I got to see them, and you know, that was really helpful for me. That's probably not sure I could have got through the tournament without that, really. So yeah, that was great. And it was really interesting to see what football was like from the other side of the world. Obviously, we see the fan base and football getting so huge here, but we don't really know what that's like elsewhere. So to see the support, the crowds, the fans, you know, people filling the streets just to come and watch a game, like any sort of game, that was amazing to see. I think that was one of my favourite things, was just to see how big football had got the other side of the world.
And I love that whole kind of the FA helping to get families out there, because that's the kind of things we don't always hear about when you're thinking about the preparation for a big tournament. But obviously that make a massive difference to your well-being as players and then your performance on the pitch and everything else too. That's interesting, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. That's one thing I've noticed since Serena has taken over, is that how important it is for her to make sure that all of our well-being is looked after. And it's not just about playing football or being healthy. It's the things that if we didn't really have our families there, I'm not sure everyone would have been able to play at their best, because if you're missing home, you know, there's people, you can't time zone, you can't speak to everyone when you want to speak to everyone. You know, I'm lucky enough that I normally have family come to every single one of my games. So to play a game without them, that happens, but that's kind of that's not so new for me. I'm not used to that. So it definitely gives me a little bit of, I guess, extra out for when I know my family are there, and it's huge for some people. Some others, they might not have been bothered if they didn't see their families, but I think that they really try, you know, the England staff really try their best to make sure that we don't have to think or worry about a single thing other than just playing football. So yeah, for me, the help and support we get from them is incredible. I think that obviously there are some senior players in the team who have fought for so much for so long over a long period of time, that maybe there's certain things that for them maybe still aren't good enough or are given, or that we should get better support from. But I think as someone who's not been in the team for so long, I've not seen that side of things. I've only seen the really great things, that we get all this help and all the support and everything. So I only really have a really positive things to kind of talk about, but I know that there's players there that have had to fight a long, long time to get what we now get. And I think that because of them constantly fighting for better things, you know, that's why we're so fortunate now. So a massive credit to those senior players who have continued the fight for us.
Brilliant. Absolutely. It was obviously an incredible achievement to make it to the final, and you had the whole kind of country supporting behind you. Spain eventually prevailed in the final, of course, but I guess what followed with the uncovering of the sexism and the misogyny in Spanish football was so powerful. It's had such a big impact. As England players, were you aware of what the Spanish team had been dealing with in the build-up to the World Cup?
Yeah, I think so. I think everyone knows, you know, even if you don't know the full facts, everyone knows that something in the Spanish team and the Spanish system wasn't right and wasn't how it should be. And obviously we have some players that play in Spain, so we were aware of the difficulties and the challenges that some of them were facing. And obviously as athletes, I think every nation just tried their best to support them in the best way that we could. But I think that the way that the Spanish conducted themselves throughout the tournament, whilst going through so much and before and after the tournament, was incredible, and a massive credit to them to go through all of that and to then come out of a World Cup having won it is phenomenal.
And how do you feel in terms of, I guess, football as a sport, a broad question really, but in terms of that inherent sexism and misogyny that we still see? I don't want to bloody mention the man with the ranty posts on Twitter about female pundits at the moment, but they just feel like there's this band of men that come out that are so resistant to women even having any part within the game. And I wonder how you as an elite player feel about that, or do you just shut yourself off from that? What's your thinking there?
In my honest opinion, quite frankly, I don't care about anyone's opinions other than those that matter most to me, whether that's family, friends, teammates, coaches. If you're none of those, I don't care about your opinion when it comes to much, but specifically not football really. Obviously, it's still never nice to see comments about, you know, negative things about you. It's horrible to see. I wouldn't go onto social media and tell someone else how to do their job. So I find it tough when people do that for us. But I think that what we have to remember is there's a reason why I play for Chelsea. There's a reason why I get selected for England. And, you know, remembering the good things that I can do, remembering the qualities that I can bring in. Yes, of course, we've all got weaknesses. We all have really, really bad games as well. But 9 times out of 10, we do something really, really good for the team, and that we're all important in whatever role that we play. And I think that you just have to remember those things. You know, what makes you is such a big gift to yourself and the players and people around you.
I love that. Yeah, people that matter. That is the focus, really, isn't it?
Yeah.
And as a lioness, after the huge success of the Euros and the World Cup, we've obviously suddenly become these huge role models for young girls. So how does that feel as a responsibility for you? And has it changed how you behave at all, or what you're sharing on social media and those kind of things?
Yeah, I think that's always a really tough thing when people speak about being a role model, because it's never something I saw myself being. I think that for me, I don't play football to inspire the next generation. I play football because I love playing football and I want to play football. If we can help and support and be there and be an inspiration to people and it's part of the journey, then that's incredible. If there's young girls that want to be like me, that's amazing, because I never looked up to a female athlete and wanted to be like them because of the female footballers specifically. I didn't know anything about when I was younger, so there was no one that I aspired to be. So if someone looks and sees a Jess Carter and wants to be like Jess Carter, then obviously that's amazing. And I think that we've got some great people in our team, specifically in England, you know, the likes of Lotta Ruben Moy, who really, really pushed to try and leave football in a better place. And to be able to be part of that, like, for instance, Lotta's journey in terms of helping to leave football in a better place and help give access to other people around England is incredible. And it does feel amazing when we've, you know, achieved things such as extra PE hours for every girl and boy in school. Like, that's an incredible achievement. And to see more girls and boys wanting to play football, that's amazing as well. So I think that those things are incredible. Seeing more fans come to the game is great to be part of, for sure. I do think it probably, you know, when we do look at social media, I have gone from I'll post whatever I want to post because it's my social media to being a little bit more aware of what's out there, for sure, because of not just for the young boys or girls, it's also how I want to come across as well. It's about, I want to be my authentic self, but I also want to show, you know, be honest about kind of the person that I am as well. And it's sometimes it's difficult because you're like, it's just social media. It's just my Insta. Like, who cares what I post on it? But there are a lot of people who care what I post. And so I do think you have to be a little bit aware of how things come across, because as much as it's just about yourself, you're also representing, I'm also representing England and Chelsea. And Chelsea and England are also a brand as well. And they have to come across a certain way to their supporters as well. So you don't want to see or do things that might upset them as well.
Yeah, it's interesting on the role models piece, isn't it? Because I sometimes feel the male players don't have this pressure to be role models. Like, if I was interviewing a male footballer, which I don't think I would be on the Game Changers, but if I was, I wouldn't be saying, oh, how does it feel to be a role model for young boys? It's like, there's almost like a double standard that the men can just be great players. And if young boys and girls aspire to them, that's fine. But it isn't like the centre of what we expect of them. It's interesting, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm not too sure, like, why things like, I guess because of male football has always been a thing that's always been in the media. It's not something new. Whereas women's football, even though it's not something new, they played it and were phenomenal at it many, many years ago. But it's now coming out as if it's something new. And there is an extra expectation, I think, that female footballers have to give and do more than male footballers. Male footballers can go play football, go home, do whatever they want. I don't think that we can do that as such. Yes, they are scrutinized on a whole nother level because of their profiles are so big that the abuse that male footballers get is, abuse is never good, but the abuse that male footballers get is incredibly poor. Like, it's so bad on a much bigger level. But I think that we have an expectation to be role models. We have an expectation to leave the game in a better place, or to drive standards here, or push for more, etc. Whereas men just get it, and they don't have an expectation to have to inspire everyone else. I'm not sure why we do. I can't answer that for you, because we always get asked about being a role model. But I guess maybe it's because I didn't have role models. You know, there's other people that have got role models to be a male footballer because they saw it every single day on their TV screens growing up, whereas I didn't. So I guess that we do have, you know, a little bit of a responsibility to do that, because, you know, we want young girls and boys to want to play football. We want them to go and do whatever they want to do and enjoy and have no barriers that we maybe have faced.
I think for me also as well, the bigger piece for SportMe is it's not even about the football. It's about young girls seeing you and the Lionesses and that success, and then being able to go in the playground and stand their ground with boys and do whatever they want to do in life that isn't necessarily sport, but having the confidence to be strong women and have equality in society. So that's why I think it's so important. I wonder, obviously you're a defender, and I wonder, well, does it ever frustrate you when you see the forwards and that other players that almost get more media attention, the sponsorship, the profile, or are you just really happy with being where you are? Does that ever kind of bubble away and frustrate you?
I think it's a bit of both, really, because I've never understood why, you know, strikers get either better contracts or more media or better sponsorship. I never understood, because I don't know. I don't get it. We all do exactly the same thing. You can't play a single game without every position on the pitch. And you could have a striker who has missed 10 out of 15 chances, but because they've scored the 5 goals, they're still amazing. It doesn't make sense to me at all. But at the same time, I also feel like sometimes it comes with more pressure of having more sponsorships, bigger contracts. There is more pressure for you as well to have to perform. And so maybe those that go a little bit under the radar maybe don't have, maybe have a bit more freedom to just play and what will be. So I think it comes hand in hand. You know, obviously, if you do have a bigger profile, then yes, it comes with better contracts, better sponsorships, which can only help improve certain aspects of your life. But equally, I'm not sure how many people would actually want to have the pressure that comes with it as well.
Yeah. Are you happy where you are?
Yeah.
You're very open about being a gay woman in a relationship with a fellow footballer, with Anne. And have you ever faced any challenges or pushback being that open? Or are you just really comfortable with your place, especially within the world of women's football?
Yeah, no, I've personally never faced any challenges with it. I've got a really accepting family and really open family. And for me, meeting Anne, it was something entirely new to me. Before Anne, I'd never been with a woman. So that was something entirely new to me. But I just, my family, when I told them, they were like, okay, they didn't care. It was like, why are you even telling me, sort of thing. So maybe I was really lucky to have a family that literally couldn't care less. And I think that I'm very comfortable and confident in who I am, regardless of who I'm with. So I think for me, there's nothing anyone could say that would change that for me. You know, I think I'm lucky to have had a family which has almost built me up with this confidence to be who I am, because not everyone, unfortunately, has that. Of course, you always got on social media stupid comments, homophobic comments. But I think that, you know, it kind of just makes me laugh more than anything, because it's like some of the comments that you get are like, well, if I was with a guy, then I'd be with you. It's some of them are so ridiculous. It's so ridiculous that there's no other possible way to interpret it other than to just laugh. I've only had really amazing people in my life to support me. And it makes me sad when I know that there's some people out there that don't have that. For sure. But I think that women's football is such an inclusive sport that anyone can just be whoever they want to be. I'm not sure why that's not the case in every aspect of life, but I do know women's football, it's just literally you could be whoever you want to be and no one's going to care. And there's just nothing but support. And that does give me a really nice feeling about women's football, that it's so inclusive.
I spoke to Katie Stoney on the podcast, actually, and she said she delayed coming out publicly when she was captain because she so hated that stereotype of, oh, a female footballer, therefore you must be gay. And she didn't want to give people more ammunition to talk negatively about women's football. So I wonder whether, and that is obviously a different way of viewing it. And clearly she talked really openly about the fact that she was so pleased that she did and the impact that's had, but interesting that she didn't want to further that kind of stereotype that people have.
Yeah, I think that obviously everyone feels so differently about it, and everyone's journey to might influence whether they are open about it or not. For me, I don't see what hiding it has, how that benefit, maybe that benefits you, because maybe you're just a private person, you don't want anyone knowing your business, and that's 100% totally fine as well. Unfortunately for me, I'm far too open and I tell you everything really. But equally, if it helps someone else, you know, if someone else sees actually, yeah, it is fine to be who you want to be, you know, these girls are, they play at the highest level and they are absolutely who they want to be, which means yes, I can do that as well. And I think that for me is big as well. And you know, it also goes back to social media. If I go and do so, have an amazing holiday with my partner, I want to be able to show it just the way a straight couple would. Yeah. Like, what is the difference? And I want other people to be able to be like that. And I'd like to give the narrative that women's football is inclusive, not, oh, you play football, so you must be gay. There's a plenty of straight women in football, plenty of them,
yeah,
as well. And I just think that it's just the case that we are just acceptant to being whoever you want to be.
Yeah, absolutely. There's been quite a lot of noise in the media recently about the lack of diversity in the England team, I'd say in the last 5 years or so. And I know that's also been an issue for some of the WSL clubs as well. So as a black woman who's had success in the WSL and with England, why do you feel there is still that issue?
I think when we speak about diversity in women's football, I think it's a really tough thing to ever get right, because I think I firstly believe that Serena picks the best people that she think suits her team, her style of play, etc. And I'm a big believer in that. And I am a big believer in that in most clubs as well. I don't, maybe that's me being too, like, I don't know, positive or whatever, and that everyone's great. But I think that managers don't think about the colour of someone's skin when they're playing. It's about who best fits their system. I think that obviously dependent on in certain circumstances. I know we've worked a lot, spoken a lot with England and the FA about making sure that football is accessible for everyone. And that's everyone all over England. We always talk about inner cities, but I come from a little town in a little village where football wasn't as accessible for everyone there either. So, you know, it's that we almost have to change the narrative. Not everyone has a sob story. Not everyone has grown up in a rough inner city place. Not everyone's struggling. It's just the case of making it super accessible for everyone. And I think that's been the most important thing is, and I know they've tried to do a lot of their research to try and make football accessible in areas where there is more diversity. And I hope, and I think that years to come, that now that they've put that in place, there might be more diversity coming through. But I also think that it's also down to interpretation, because I don't see diversity just as black skin or white skin. It's also a case of, and you know, Arsenal, I know, have been in the media a lot lately. They have so many players there from different nationalities. Like, I don't think there is a more diverse, Chelsea, I'll give you a run for your money, but there's not a more diverse team based off of where people come from. That to me is also diversity. It's not just as simple as who is black and white. And I think that's also, for me, part of the issue. When we talk about diversity, we only ever talk about black people or white people. There are so many other races that can play football, but we only ever talk about black or white. And I think that bothers me, because it's like you're almost cutting off a large proportion of other ethnicities or minorities. And it's just about how can we make football accessible for everyone, not just for a certain race, certain group.
You've clearly had an extraordinary career so far, Jess. I just wonder, in terms of future goals and ambitions, and I know you've kind of reflected on almost not having those big goals and ambitions, but but what do you still have for the future? Would you like to play abroad at some point? I'm not conceding anything in terms of where you might go in the future, yeah. But what are your ambitions there?
Yeah, I do think I'd like to play abroad at some point. I don't know where yet. I think I'd like to try somewhere else in Europe and possibly outside of Europe at some point, just to see what it's kind of like, really. And yeah, I don't know when that will be. I've very much lived, my family are only an hour and a half from me, so I don't know how I'm going to do further away than that. But it's definitely something that interests me. I've been in England for a while now, 10 years since I was 16. So I think it definitely at some point would be interesting to try somewhere else, just to see, I guess, one, to test myself elsewhere. And I guess also to see what the way of life is somewhere else. I mean, football for me isn't everything. It's, you know, the way of life and just your happiness outside of that. I think if you're happy outside of football, then you're performing best at football, which I've already mentioned. And I think that where you play and where you live and your home life can have a massive influence on that. So at some point, yeah, I'd like to try elsewhere. I'm just not sure at what point I'll be ready.
And do you think about the path you might like to take at the end of your playing career? I realise you've got lots of playing left to do, but is that something in your head in terms of what else you might like to do beyond football?
That is something that really scares me, the thought of life after football, because I've absolutely no idea. You know, we as players, I think, talk about it a lot because we don't have the luxury of just stopping playing football and sitting on money for the next handful of years, because most of us don't have that. So it is obviously something that really have to think about. And I think over the course of our career, we start to realize things that we do and don't like. When we have to different media things, you realize things that you do and don't enjoy. I'm currently doing a UEFA B, which I don't enjoy,
right.
But I'm like, I never know at some point, maybe at the end of my career, I might want to be a coach. And I think that obviously coming from football, it would be a great option to have if I wanted to do it. And so I'm slowly, gradually doing that at the moment. So we'll see how that goes. But yeah, I'm not too sure, really. I'm not too sure. I know I can chat a lot. So as you've well noticed, so, you know, I like interacting with people, and now I'm not sure what job is that I can do. I just sit and chat with people. I'm not sure yet. So I'll
like
have to
this,
see.
Like my
It'll
job.
Be a, yeah, be doing podcasts maybe. I don't think I can think of the questions though.
And just finally, if you were having a conversation now, I say with yourself as a younger girl who wanted to play for England, but I don't think that you did want to play for England then, but or a younger girl who wanted to play for England, what kind of advice would you give to a young player coming through today?
I think for me, I think I've always got two most important things is, one, to just completely be yourself. don't, you know, I've seen a lot of people try to change to suit a manager, suit other people, or be someone that who they think that they should be just to kind of advance in football. And I think that the best thing you can do is be your absolute self and to, I guess, just do what makes you happy. Because if you're not happy, you're not going to perform at your best. And I know that I've experienced that firsthand for my own self. And I think that ultimately, when you're happy, you do the best that you can do. And if you don't do your best that you can do, you're not happy. So it comes hand in hand. And they're two, for me, the biggest things.
What a fantastic young woman Jess Carter is. I so enjoyed talking to her and loved her warm, open approach to our whole conversation. If you enjoyed the podcast, there are over 160 episodes featuring conversations with women's sport trailblazers that are free to listen to on all podcast platforms, or you can find them at our website, fearlesswomen.co.uk. Other lionesses I've spoken to for the podcast include Lucy Bronze, Casey Stoney, Jill Scott, Anita Asante, Steph Horton, Enya Luko, Farah Williams, Hope Powell, Kelly Smith and Rachel Yankee. As well as listening to all the podcasts on the website, you can also find out more about the Women's Sport Collective, a free, inclusive community for all women working in sport. The whole of my book, Game On, The Unstoppable Rise of Women's Sport, is also free to listen to on the podcast. Every episode of Series 13 is me reading a chapter of the book. Thanks again to Sport England for backing the Game Changers and the Women's Sport Collective through the National Lottery. And to Sam Walker at What Goes On Media, who does such a great job as our executive producer. Thank you also to my fantastic colleague at Fearless Women, Kate Hannan. You can find the Game Changers on all podcast platforms, and do follow us now so you don't miss out on future episodes. If you have a moment to leave a review or a rating, that would be fantastic, as it really does help us to reach new audiences. Do come and say hello on social media, where you'll find me at Sue Anstis. The Game Changers, fearless women in sport.